From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. When former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez died in 2013, his chosen successor, Nicolas Maduro, took power in a country facing huge economic challenges and a deep political divide. Since then, Venezuela's political and economic problems have only gotten worse. The economy has halved in size, and relations with the opposition have cratered after opposition parties boycotted elections in 2018 amid widespread reports that the ballot was rigged. More than 3 million people fled the country last year. Now, all this has taken a toll on Venezuela's media. Unable to buy newsprint, newspapers have been shuttered. Many of the country's independent radio and TV stations have been closed, and a number of Venezuelan journalists have been forced to flee the country under threat. Websites critical of the government are periodically blocked. But Venezuela is not Cuba or North Korea. There are still a number of independent and critical journalists trying to cover the news, though their job is far from easy. So on this edition of Global Journalist, we'll hear more about this from some people who have been following Venezuela's media closely. Up first, we're going to bring in Cody Weddle. He's an American journalist who reported for numerous outlets from Venezuela, including Miami's WPLG Local 10 News and ABC News. Last year, he was detained by Venezuelan security officials and kicked out of the country. He joins us now from Bogota in neighboring Colombia. Cody Weddle, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Tell us, you were detained by Venezuelan security forces in March and ended up being deported after spending 5 years in Venezuela. Give us just a bit of background about what happened.
Well, it was on March 6th. I was in my apartment. It was about 6:30 in the morning, and the doorbell rang. I thought it was the guy who delivers the water, and instead it was about five armed members of the Military Directorate of Counterintelligence. They had an order to raid my apartment. I was under investigation for espionage, extraction of military equipment, and treason, I believe. And eventually I opened the door. They came in. They were going through my things. They were very interested in my phone and my computer. Any information I had, that was what they were interested in. I was later taken to their headquarters and interrogated some more. And then later that day, I was taken to the airport, and the next morning I was on a flight to Miami.
Well, you'd been in Venezuela for four or five years, I think. Why is it only in March of last year that you get accused of espionage and treason and deported?
Well, I think we had reached a time in Venezuela where we had seen the polarization there and the paranoia on both sides, especially within the government, reached levels that we had never seen. And so my theory, although they never told me exactly why I was being investigated or arrested, was that I did a story about the internal workings of the military and whether the military was ready to turn against Nicolas Maduro. And I interviewed low-ranking members of the military and the police force. And at some point, it appears there was some type of translation error, because these people who were interrogating me thought I had interviewed military generals. And they kept asking me who were the military generals who I interviewed, and I never interviewed military generals. So that would have been significant if I interviewed military generals who said they wanted to turn on Maduro. That wasn't the case. So I think it was a problem with translation, and they wanted the names of those military generals.
Well, that's interesting that there might have been a translation error that led to this. But this also came at a time of very high tension in Venezuela, because many of our audience will remember there was this opposition leader, Juan Guaido, who had declared himself president and had been recognized as Venezuela's president instead of Maduro by the United States and a number of other countries. What's the status of this sort of like two president system that existed for several months?
Well, for now, it continues. The power struggle there continues. I think almost 60 countries now recognize Juan Guaido as the official president. But internally in Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro very much is still in charge. He still has the weapons, the military, the police, and the state infrastructure. So it continues. At first, it really felt like we were on the verge of something happening there. In other words, that Nicolas Maduro may be on his way out. But as time has dragged on, it now appears difficult for Juan Guaido to really overthrow Maduro in any way or convince the military to back him. And what we know is he has probably another year before elections will be called for new parliamentary elections. And that would basically strip him of his spot as the president of the National Assembly, and he really couldn't claim the presidency anymore.
You talked about the security officials showing up at your apartment at 6:30 in the morning to detain you and throw you out of the country. What other challenges had you faced as a journalist in Venezuela prior to that?
Well, Venezuela is so polarized. So, you know, journalists are facing attacks, especially in these protests. You know, even in opposition protests, sometimes there's confusions and journalists can be attacked and, you know, the crowd can turn on journalists. But in general, I had never felt, you know, intimidated or even under surveillance or threatened in any way. That was really, at least from the state, you know, from the authorities, that was the first time I really felt, you know, that they were watching me or taking actions against me.
Well, when you moved to Venezuela back in 2014, you worked for a big TV network called Telesur that covers Latin America. It's actually owned in part by the Venezuelan government. Critics have long said that this is sort of a mouthpiece for Maduro propaganda. What was your experience working there?
That's right. I arrived in Venezuela when I was 22, I think, a young journalist who got the, you know, this job at this television network. I didn't know much about Telesur. And, you know, I think Telesur started with good intentions. Its first president really wanted to show a different perspective about Latin America. But over the years, as Venezuela has become more of a battleground, it's really become a mouthpiece for Maduro in all ways. And that was my experience as well. You know, I was there, you know, trying to do actual journalism. And my experience was that most of the stuff I did wasn't published. Most of, you know, I would be told to hurry up on a piece, on a story, and then I would do it and it wasn't published. So I think really it has declined and it's become really a propaganda outlet for Maduro.
Well, Cody Weddle, you're working in Colombia right now. Do you have any intention to go back to Venezuela? Are you able to return to Venezuela?
Well, it's not clear. I had a residency visa in Venezuela. I had been there for 5 years. The residency visa is still on my passport. They didn't, you know, mark that out or anything. So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to return to Venezuela for now, but that's not in my plans, at least until I can confirm that there's not a legal process there against me or, you know, that I wouldn't be in danger of being arrested again. So I would like to return. Certainly, I have a lot of friends there and a lot of, you know, most of my career was there. So that's in my plans as soon as I can.
Well, Cody Weddle, best of luck to you. And thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about the news media in Venezuela, a country where economic collapse and deep political divisions has created an unusually difficult climate for journalists. To broaden our discussion, we're going to bring in three other guests who know this issue well. Joining us from Caracas is Angus Berwick. He's a correspondent there for Reuters. Angus, welcome.
Hi, great to be here.
Also with us in Chicago is Stephanie Rodriguez. She's a Venezuelan journalist who fled the country after helping make a film documenting human rights abuses by the government. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
And on the line from New York City is Natalie Southwick. She's the Central and South America Program Coordinator at the Committee to Protect Journalists.
Great to be back on the program.
Well, it's fun to have you. Angus Berwick, let me start with you because you've done some investigative reporting in Venezuela for Reuters. You had a very big piece out in November about an elite government police force that was acting basically as a death squad, it sounded like, in Caracas. Tell us a little bit about that piece and what some of the repercussions were of it.
Right. So me and my colleague here, Sarah Kanosian, we spent several months investigating up to kind of 20 cases of alleged kind of extrajudicial killings carried out by this police force, which is known as the FICE, which Maduro created in kind of mid 2017. Really as a kind of as a tool of repression. And so over the course of several months, we traveled, you know, across the country, speaking to victims and witnesses of these killings. And, you know, and what we found is that this, you know, this police unit really does exist in a kind of total atmosphere of impunity. They go where they want. You know, they effectively, you know, they kill they, you know, they they kill who they want, and other government forces then assist them in covering up the details behind those deaths.
Well, Angus, let me ask you this. I mean, did you feel free to report on this issue, or was someone from the government breathing down your neck while you're out interviewing people about extrajudicial killings?
I mean, we weren't aware of ourselves being followed, although, you know, we did spend time with this police unit, and, you know, on numerous occasions after interviewing relatives of one particular victim, you know, they would then later tell us that, you know, local police had stopped by their houses later on to warn them, you know, don't go speaking to media. So I think these are the kind of constant considerations that we were dealing with, you know, during the reporting process, you know, balancing, you know, these people really want to tell their stories, and they want the world to know, you know, what is happening here. But, you know, we also have a responsibility to protect them from any possible reprisals.
Well, Stephanie Rodriguez, let me bring you into the conversation as well, because you've done a lot of work on human rights abuses in Venezuela as well. You helped produce this documentary called Venezuela, The Truth, that covers human rights abuses by the government. One of the victims of the government that you cover in the film is your brother. Tell us just a little bit about his story.
Well, and my brother is not in the movie like that, but it's like when he was arrested in 2017, April 6th. And after that, I just dedicate my whole time to show, to be on the streets, taking pictures and just posting everything and showing to the world what's going on. Of course, he was just 2 days in jail, but that was actually the worst experience of our life, to say for me and my family. And yes, after that, I came here to state, and I just started working with an amazing team on this documentary, Venezuela, The Truth, actually shows a society that faced a huge devastation. It's about a humanitarian, social, economic, and political crisis. The struggle to survive that is constantly increasing in this country, and the migratory process and family breakdown are becoming more and more and more frequent.
Well, Stephanie, let me ask you this. I mean, so you've made this film. It's very critical of the government. How did you know that you had to leave the country?
Well, it's complicated because, of course, when they gave me my brother, I was threatened, also my family and my brother. And after that, when I started writing the documentary, I went back to Venezuela to help to produce the documentary in Venezuela. So after the movie was already done, one of the producers was in Argentina. She gave an interview, and after that, of course, everything was like showing up, and the team was really afraid, to say it like that. So they were, okay, you have to get out of there. And I just had to leave the country in 3 or 4 days, if I remember. But yeah, it was a really hard moment because I didn't really want to leave the country. I just was forced to do it.
Well, Natalie Southwick, if I could bring you in. We've heard Cody Weddle's experience, who was deported from Venezuela. We heard Stephanie Rodriguez, who felt like it wasn't safe for her to stay there any longer. And then Angus Berwick's as well. Give us just, if you would, a little bit of an overview right now of the situation for press freedom in Venezuela.
Sure. I mean, the situation for press freedom in Venezuela right now is extremely difficult. It's one of the most challenging countries certainly on the continent, to be a journalist. We've heard some pretty clear examples of some of the difficulties that journalists face reporting in Venezuela. The Venezuelan state has a huge number of tools in its arsenal to try to make life and work really difficult for reporters, whether that's something as extreme as what Cody went through, being arrested, being interrogated, or just the kind of more regular day-to-day surveillance of journalists, stopping journalists when they're trying to report, forcing photographers to delete their photos, state agencies shutting down radio stations, the government shutting down access to internet, to particular sites or to different social media platforms at times that they don't want people to access information. So there's a huge number of challenges that journalists are facing trying to do their job in Venezuela, and that also affect the ability of Venezuelans to access information.
Well, Angus Berwick, you were talking with one of our producers, and we heard Natalie talking about sort of the closure of all the different media outlets. To our producer, you mentioned that parts of this country are almost like information-free environments, that there's effectively no news that's getting out to certain parts of the country.
Yeah, you have to think that, you know, especially kind of rural areas, you know, and entire cities often spend, you know, days now without any power. You know, cell reception is often atrocious, and also a lot of the websites, you know, owned by independent local media here, websites like El Pitazo, for example, are actually often blocked by the kind of the state's kind of telecom regulator. So you actually need a VPN in order to even read the, you know, the journalism which these outlets are still producing, you know, in very difficult circumstances.
Well, Stephanie Rodriguez, I mean, one feature of the Venezuelan media environment is a strong dose of government propaganda. Do you get the sense that people believe everything they hear on state radio, on state television? Like, does it have a real impact on people's political views?
I'm not going to say that everybody believes in what they're looking and watching on the television, because we already know what's going on. And actually, the media is in total control. The government has the total control of the media. So the people who actually follows the government, that of course are not a lot, they maybe believe everything they said. But we get to look for the media outside, for digital media or reporters that really shows to the world what's going on. But those are the ones who are in danger, because the government doesn't want them to show the world what's happening in Venezuela. So it can be like a really big deal, because we don't have a way to know what it's happening inside of the country. Actually, in the outside, no more that we when we are in Venezuela.
Well, Natalie Southwick, if I could turn this to you, I mean, it sounds like it's a very polarized environment there right now, particularly when it comes to the media and where people are getting their information from. But I know that I understand that one tool that the government has in its arsenal when it comes to sort of silencing critical voices is an anti-hate speech law that was passed a couple years ago. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the government has used several different kinds of legislation, as well as just lawsuits against media outlets, to try to silence them, in addition to the other kind of more overt forms of censorship that we're seeing. But the anti-hate law, when it was passed, we were very concerned about it, because it really doesn't define hate speech at all. It's very broad, and it leaves it up to interpretation of the authorities to determine what is hate speech. And so we've seen the effects of laws like that in a number of countries. You know, Nicaragua, we saw two journalists that were in prison for 6 months, supposedly for inciting hate. And we've seen it used not to impose such long prison sentences yet in Venezuela against journalists, but certainly as a way to intimidate people, because essentially anything that you write that's viewed as critical could potentially fall under that anti-hate law if the authorities want to do so. So it's really just another way of trying to intimidate and frighten people into not reporting on perhaps sensitive topics.
A reminder that you're tuned into Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. On today's program, we're talking about how the news media operates in Venezuela. We're joined from Caracas by Angus Berwick of Reuters, as well as by the Venezuelan journalist Stephanie Rodriguez and Natalie Southwick of the Committee to Protect Journalists. So, Stephanie, if I could bring you back into this conversation, you know, this film that you made, Venezuela, The Truth, I mean, it is available on the internet. How challenging is it for a film like that, that is critical of the government, to get distribution, to get viewers inside Venezuela?
No, that's actually impossible. And not also not only in Venezuela. When we were trying to put the movie in some channels, they were really afraid, because they have reception in Venezuela and also in other countries in Latin America. So, yeah, it's more about how afraid people are to show the truth. And in that moment is when you really realize who are the ones who really want to face what's going on, and the ones who are just pretending they're facing it. And when we made this movie, we were thinking about English speakers, because Venezuelans already know what's going on. We wanted to know the world what's going on. So yeah, it has been like hard when the movie is already in a channel or published. It's gonna be hard to go back to Venezuela, and because we really explain everything little by little, what's going on, actually what's going on right now.
And Natalie Southwick, you know, unfortunately we lost Angus Berwick for a moment there, but he had been talking about this investigation conducted by this online news outlet Armando.info into Venezuela's opposition, essentially, and finding some evidence of corruption there among Juan Guaido's allies. And this has really created a lot of waves in Venezuela. But my understanding is that this news site, like many others, is actually run by people who aren't in Venezuela.
That's correct. I was actually really excited to jump into that question anyways, because we've worked with a number of Venezuelan journalists who are continuing to do really incredible work despite the challenges that they're facing, both within and from outside of the country. The head editors of Armando.info have been working from most of them from Bogota for quite a while now. They fled the country when they were facing threats of lawsuits. But obviously a number of journalists are still working with them inside the country. And there are a lot of other examples of really great reporting happening that's not just looking at, you know, the Maduro administration, but is also reporting more broadly on issues of migration, corruption, the socioeconomic crisis. I think it's important to remember that Venezuela, one of the strengths there for journalists is that there is a really long legacy of very talented reporters there. It had such a strong journalistic infrastructure. And so that's why the government has targeted journalists so much, but it's also why it's been so hard for them to fully silence them, because there are too many people in the country who still want to be reporting and still want to be, as Stephanie said, informing the world about what's happening.
And Angus Berwick, if I could draw you back into this conversation now, you know, I mean, I wanted to get a sense from you, just how safe is it for you as a journalist to go out and walk in the streets and interview people? I mean, we've heard periodic reports that it's actually, for many journalists, it's just dangerous to be on the streets of Caracas in certain neighborhoods interviewing people about certain topics.
So I would say, I think one of the key challenges, especially for international media, is to really kind of get out of Caracas as much as possible, because obviously within Caracas there is effectively a bubble where, you know, life, where, you know, for people who earn in foreign currency, you know, life is a little bit better. You know, power is more stable, it's slightly more secure. So it's, you know, so for our challenge, you know, as a, you know, for Reuters, is really to get out and travel around the country as much as possible. And, you know, and that's where we often run into security issues. A few months ago, I was traveling out to the east of the country for a story on migrants, when we were, I think, ambushed by kind of armed bandits on this stretch of road. You know, and fortunately, you know, I was, you know, I always go with one of our drivers who is very adept at kind of managing situations like that. And we were able to, you know, quickly kind of get out of the area. But yeah, I think doing that sort of reporting, you need to have a good team behind you. And so, you know, for me personally, it's, you know, knowing that Reuters has the resources and the kind of the experience to deal with these situations is always very reassuring.
Certainly, but
just to add to that,
yeah, go ahead,
can I
Natalie,
add to that
please.
Point quickly, just to follow up on that, I think, you know, that raises a really important point that there are so many incidents and affecting journalists in the regions outside of Caracas and the major cities, but particularly Caracas, is that international reporters working for international outlets do have more support. They have a little bit of a safety net. There's more of a fast response, and that journalists who are working in smaller towns and rural regions are often the ones who are facing the most risk, both because security forces there know who they are. There's just, it's harder to kind of fade into the crowd. And they also may be one of the few people there who are reporting on what's going on. So the combination of being more visible and having fewer resources really puts them at a lot more risk. And we saw that certainly over the last year with reporters covering the border between Colombia and Venezuela when there have been kind of incidents of border closings or major events around there. We've seen a spike in harassment of journalists, but especially targeting Venezuelan reporters, local reporters who may be seen as easier to intimidate.
Well, I mean, you raise a number of interesting points here, but as our time does grow short, I wanted to end this with maybe some forward-looking sentiments here. And Stephanie Rodriguez, if I could bring you back in, how do you see things going forward in Venezuela over the next year or two? I mean, it seems like the country has been rocked by unrest and turmoil for years and years and years now. But I would think that if you're President Maduro, you're kind of happy with how the year is ending now. I mean, it seems like he's effectively seen off this challenge from the opposition leader, Juan Guaido. I mean, do you have some optimism for 2020?
Okay, I want to say that yes, but I don't see that they're doing like a really good job. I feel like sometimes I'm not sure in who I can trust, you know. And it's really hard to say, even if all the Venezuelans around the world are just expecting that just to go back, because that's the truth. I don't feel like this government is actually linked to drug trafficking, to cartel. There are killers. We are not talking about normal people. We are talking about people who has ambition of powers, and they are the protagonists of the misery of so many people and so much pain. So I think that we have to take actions instead of just sitting and wait for them to just quit, you know. So, yeah, it's kind of hard. Actually, when we were doing the movie, I have to say thank you, because what the other two journalists that were talking here with me said, it's true, because it was so hard to get people who helped into the movie, because they wanted to be part of the project, but they were so afraid, because, they are living in Venezuela, they have family in Venezuela, and they are just keeping quiet the people over there because they're afraid to something to happen. So they are in the whole control of the country. So we have to take actions in this and not just sit down and wait what's going to happen.
Well, it sounds like there are still many challenges that remain, but unfortunately we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Our thanks to Cody Weddle, Stephanie Rodriguez, Angus Berwick, and Natalie Southwick. Our assistant producers this week are Laura Miserez and Ariana Suardi. Trevor Hook is our supervising producer, and Kyle McCubbin is visual editor. Tia Thomas is audio engineer. I do want to mention that after 6 years at Global Journalist, I'll be leaving the program in January, and this will be the last regular episode I'll record. We'll continue to release pre-recorded shows for the next several weeks, and the program will be going on a temporary hiatus. Before signing off, I do want to thank the many extremely talented and hardworking student producers who've worked on the program over the years, as well as the staff at KBIA. Thanks also to our executive editor, Kathy Kiley, as well as longtime collaborator and director, Travis McMillan. My special gratitude to you, our listeners, for supporting public radio and programs like this. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.